Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, December 1st, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab also on the right, top right side of the website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in 1 Corinthians, and let's see if we can find it here. That was it, wasn't it? Okay. All right, yeah, we're in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 2.
By the way, someone's got a mic on.
And I, brethren, when I came to you, came not with excellency of speech or of wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of God. For I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. And my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Howbeit, we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world that come to naught, but we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world unto our glory, which none of the princes of this world knew. For had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. But God hath revealed them unto us by his Spirit. For the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. For what man knoweth the things of a man, save the spirit of man which is in him? Even so, the things of God knoweth no man but the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the Spirit of the world, but the Spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God, which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teacheth, but which the Holy Ghost teacheth, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. But the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But he that is spiritual judgeth all things, yet he himself is judged of no man. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ.
Okay, the queue's open. If anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. If you're on a phone, should be a button there if you're on an app or browser. Jen, do we have any questions tonight?
We do have one question, John. It is, will John's book, Court Access and the Common Law, suffice in place of the jurisdictionary course?
Well, the jurisdictionary course is done by a lawyer. I'm wondering if he's wondering if it would suffice concerning our course that we have up there on National Liberty Alliance. Can you make anything else out of that, Jan, or you don't know?
No, it doesn't say. I'm just figuring that he figured he would read the book.
Yeah.
And everything he got out of that, would that be as much as he would have gotten out of the jurisdictionary course?
Yeah, if you understand basic, the basic court process, how court process actually works, then of course this could be helpful and assist. But the book's not going to be any better than the course. The course is far superior because we get into so many different details and discussions. And we're focused, of course, on the common law along with due process, how the court system actually does work. There is no problem with the process of due process within the courts. The problem is that they've closed the courts of justice and only opened up civil law courts. And they're no longer courts of justice, and that's a major problem. But, of course, we have a lot of hope that we're going to bring these courts back. I have heard something recently, over the weekend particularly, I think, but anyway, it's recently, some talk out there that Trump is looking to get rid of a lot of judges, if not all of them. I mean, look, at we've asked, you know, through a presentment that he should get rid of all these judges. Not necessarily that Trump on his own, we did an indictment on the entire federal judiciary, which maybe we'll talk a little bit tonight before we go into any kind of a conversation. Let's see if we got anybody in the queue at the moment. Let's see if I can find that. Okay. Yeah, we do have one person in there right now. Anybody else who wants to get into the queue, it's a *6-1 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an Apple browser, should be a button. But anyway, the jurisdictionary course is done by a lawyer. I did take that course. At the time I took that course, it was $300. I think last time I looked, it was at $400 or $450 for the course. And there is a major difference. You know, I was able to download all of his information when he first started that course, so that was very helpful. And that helped me a lot with learning some of the due process, of course. He doesn't understand the common law, and like any other lawyer, he suggests, or strongly suggests, just like he was taught in his bar school, don't get into the Constitution. There's plenty of statutes out there, and there's a lot of court decisions, trial court decisions, you know. Hey, let's rest in that. Let's work with that. Stay away from that Constitution because, you know, it could get very controversial. I mean, literally, that is what these, you know, bar attorneys are actually taught. But in any event, I don't believe you can download any of his material. So as long as he's up and you've got an active course going, and I'm not sure how all that works, you got access to his course. But I think, and I could be wrong on this, but I do think, if I recall, I read through some of that stuff because I was curious on what he was doing at this point. But if I think you have to pay so much, and then it expires, and then you have to pay something else to continue to get that access. But in any event, you know, that course, again, is not going to teach anything about the common law. It's not going to get into the Constitution. And so we cover a lot of things beyond what you would be taught in bar school. But we do teach due process very well. I don't know that you're going to get the due process picture as good in the book. I'll have to take a quick look at that. You know, I may take a look at this in between calls and then maybe come back and comment a little bit just to see if, you know, how much I focused in on that. You know, on the book itself, it mostly focused in, it did focus in on the paperwork and how to put papers together and a lot of forms and different things. But, you know, our course is a 90-hour course. It's only $125. And the book, of course, I think the book is $39, so it's pretty cheap. It's hardcover, and it's a pretty thick book. And I specifically did it only hardcover because I presume people will use this as a reference book. A lot of the things that I have, you know, I put together, which is all in the course, of course. And I refer to that from time to time. It's very helpful. So, but anyway, I may comment a little more on this book before the night is over if I get the opportunity to kind of breeze through it when we get into other conversations. Now, the course we have, I think, I'm not sure whether I said this, but it's 90 hours. It's a 90-hour course. You have 100% access at all times. You can right-click on I think you can right-click on the audio. So if I didn't... Oh, yeah. Well, actually, yes, you could. Let me open it up and take a quick look at this. Okay. The course we have, Education Starts Here, come down to Court Access in the Common Law. So if you click on that, that's what's going to give you some basic information about the course. And it also is going to give you the first session, which is, these are three-hour sessions, or most of them are three-hour sessions. So you'll be able to listen to the first 3 hours and see once if you're interested in the way that we put this together and that you're going to learn. Trust me, you are going to learn how to deal with the courts. The big thing that is the hardest thing is learning to write. Due process is quite simple. How things work and how the courts operate, quite simple once you start to see. And it's logical. It hasn't changed, really. It's been the same for hundreds of years. So even the common law courts proceed, as far as due process is concerned, in the same fashion. The only problem, which is a major problem, is courts are only opening up civil law courts, and they're not opening up any courts of justice, and that, of course, is a problem. Now, with this course, let me see if I can get to it here. Once you sign into this course, the only thing you'll see here on your drop-down is Court Access in the Common Law course, where you'll be able to get in and see this page. These two pages you will get once you get into the course, okay? And here's the recorded videos right here. You can click on that, and you can download all these videos if you want. I mean, they'll be here, you know, indefinitely. Once you sign into the course, you'll have access to this all the time. We'll never change that. But if people wanted to download, you know, they can get the video. I know I have a video program. Not a video program. What do they call it? Download something. Yeah, video download helper. Firefox has its video download helper. And if you put that in and you start any of these pages, you start the video going, you'll be able to download this video. I think we have this. Probably don't have it in audio. I'm just looking to see if we did. I don't think we did put it in audio. I'll think about whether... we did put it up in audio. Okay, so we have the audio recordings also. Okay? And, of course, it's best to really listen to the audio and the video together. But... You know, once you're familiar with this, I know when I've taken, for instance, the jurisdictionary course that I had taken, and I listened to those audios over and over and over and over and over again. You know, that was very helpful to kind of sink things into my brain here. And so you could stick this onto your MP3 player when you're driving in your car. You could be listening and so on. It is really important, I think, that you really go through the videos first and then use the audios as something to really be a little more helpful. But the other thing here that we have on this course, we have a table of contents. Now, in the table of contents, everything that we're covering is listed there, and it's all downloadable. So all the things we're talking about, you can download these things. I believe they're all pretty much PDFs, but there might be a few words here for one reason or another. But we cover a lot of things. So we have the introduction, which we cover all of these different topics, and then we get into Chapter 1, which is really, we call the essentials. Talks about different things. People can go through this and see once what's in here. You know, U.S. codes are important because, remember, you know, we can use statutes and apply them against them because statutes are written for them. When I say them, I'm talking about the officers of the court, particularly the judge and, of course, the prosecutor if you're in a criminal case. But, you know, you can control them by statutes. The statutes don't apply to us, so... of course, they will try to apply them all day long. So anyway, there's a lot of information here. Everything here is downloadable, and you can follow it through the course. So the course, of course, is far superior, and the book is really sort of a good help. I suggest very strongly that if you do take the course, that you do buy the book, because the book does not go along directly with you know, the chapter layout that we have on the course and the book. I wrote the book first, and then when I put the course together, I felt it necessary to teach from a different perspective. But everything that's in the book is here plus. So we have a lot more than what's in that book. There's a lot more in this course, and a lot of downloads that you can use. A lot of forms and different things like that nature. But the book, you know, Court Access in the Common Law, if you've taken the course, it will be very helpful because you can carry the book with you and you can get a good breeze of different things. I mean, for instance, Chapter 6 in the book deals with causes of action. And you have to understand how to write a cause of action, and you have to cover certain things within a cause of action. For instance, if you were to do an abusive process as a court, as a cause of action, let me see if I can get to that page here. It's on one page 117, I think. Hopefully I'll be able to go through it quickly. Yeah. Okay. For instance, each cause of action, you have to cover certain points in that cause of action. For instance, the fact that you've been injured, the injury was caused by the defendant, and that you can prove the damage is suffered. But the abusive process, again, there is a list of requirements in order to really cover all of the, you know, the positions. But anyway, each cause of action you need to look at, and the list that we have is a basic list. They teach that in every law school. You'll get those basic lists, but there's a lot more causes of action than what's listed in the book or in the course. We couldn't possibly list all of the causes of action. Because there's all kinds of things, you know, put together. But I'll tell you what, you can go online. If you have a particular cause of action, you can go online and just Google it or whatever search engine you're using. You can run it through and ask for, you know, what are the required points for a cause of action for this or that or the other thing. And you'll find that very quickly because, again, there's a lot of causes of actions. But again, there's also a handbook that I've written, and the handbook I think is about $10. If you go over to the Welcome tab here, and you click on Books by John Darash. Now, I wrote this handbook. I used to have it in PDF form, and you can get it in PDF form. I think we have it up for download for on our PDF on our page with you know. Let me see, what would that be? Start a committee of safety, handbooks, videos, and tools. I might have the copy of this book up here also. I'm pretty sure I do. But this is a handbook that you can stick in your back pocket, your coat pocket or anything. And this particular book, again, I wrote this for the sole purpose of being able to get information off the fly while I'm in court if it's necessary. And that's called the Common Law Court Handbook right here. Okay, so that book is $11, but it's 311 pages, and it's a really powerful weapon to have, so to speak, because you can look codes up very quickly. You know, I'm looking to see how to open up a couple of, here, read a sample. Okay. We cover a lot of things in this, okay, table of contents. You know, we deal with income tax, a lot of different things on that, maxims. Let's see what they cover. Government officials may be held liable. I know we get into code listings, a lot of Supreme Court rulings, and everything is done in a way that you can kind of get through quickly in the book. And it's done in alphabetical order also. So you can look for keywords and get information in a court that you might need, a Supreme Court ruling or whatever. But generally speaking, if you're in the court and you're going through the process of, you know, they constantly like to have all these hearings. And, you know, you always want to make the point, you know, that you want to respond in writing, especially when you're new at this. You know, experience you get, you might respond off the fly to certain things, but you got to be careful, you know, because you don't want to change anything whatever you say in court could change your paperwork. So you want to make sure that you're in consistency with the paperwork that you've written and all the information you have. Also, and you can answer certain things and respond to certain things, and then you can say, well, I'd like to respond in writing and that. And then you respond with a paper and file it in the court. That gives more time to think about your response, especially when they're making some kind of a, setup in order to kind of trip you up and bring some evidence in that you need time to think about and how you might want to respond back to it. I think it's a great course. Matter of fact, we'll go through a couple of things before we get started. I was looking at this before. Let me see how many people are in the queue. Okay, we still only got one person in the queue. Anybody who wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. And if that's if you're on a phone. And if you're on an Apple browser, there should be a button. But anyway, this was an extraordinary indictment, a true bill against the federal judiciary. We indicted the entire federal judiciary because they all have broken the law. And we made some list of things. I don't think I'm going to read the whole list. It's quite long. But they're all guilty of these same things. And that proves a conspiracy. Their responses have been in the federal courts. We've filed hundreds of papers into the federal court. And no matter where you're filing them or no matter what court you're responding to or talking to, they all respond in the same way, whether it's a federal court in Texas or California, New York, New Jersey, wherever. They're all doing the same thing. And they all, every single one of them, have closed the doors of justice. You can't get a court of record open, a court of record that which proceeds according to the common law, and a common law meaning natural law, the laws of nature, nature's God. So they abrogated, that's the first item we have here, as a matter of fact, as we lay out these things. So let me just read a few of these things. I'll spend 5 minutes maybe reading through this stuff, and then we'll get into questions from the queue. We have here, for instance, let's see if we want to just start. We the people have suffered a long train of abuses and usurpations by the federal judiciary. It is therefore our right and our duty to indict and remove such tyrants. These tyrants have infiltrated our courts from the very conception of our nation and have labored continually, deteriorating our courts of justice, creating chancery courts that is contrary to the law of the land. They have enslaved us in our own courts. To prove this, let facts be submitted to the United States. We, the people, charge all federal judges and magistrates in all 94 federal districts for conspiracy and subversion as follows. For abrogating the law of the land via civil law. For abrogating the rules of common law. For stacking grand juries via intrusive questionnaires. For stacking petit juries via intrusive questionnaires. For wrongful prosecution, abuse of powers, and subversion. For adding to grand jury indictments without our permission. For intimidating people to take a plea. For conspiracy against rights in violation of 18 U.S.C. 241, for deprivation of rights under the color of law in violation of 18 U.S.C. 242, for knowingly and willfully falsifying and concealing material facts in violation of 18 U.S.C. 1001, for deprivation of rights in violation of 42 U.S.C. 1983, for neglect to prevent in violation of 42 U.S.C. 1986. So you can see how these codes can be used against these people. And again, they don't apply to us at all. For denying the defendant's right of habeas corpus. For ignoring and refusing to answer writ quo warranto. For refusing to honor their oath. For refusing to provide their oath. For refusing to provide their bonds. For manipulating the juries to achieve a guilty plea. For obstructing and the administration of justice, for refusing to acquiesce to the law of the land, for prosecuting people for pretended offenses, for creating rules that claim to abrogate the laws of nature's God, for trodden upon the rights of the people, for giving themselves special status from national customary laws derived by judicial comity. And comedy is judicial comedy is trial court decisions, and boy, there's millions of bad decisions right there. for legislating from the bench. Anybody listening to paying attention to the trials when Trump was going to the court, you can see how defunct they are. For legislating from the bench, for making it impossible for victims of government wrongdoings to hold the government accountable, for fashioning sweeping doctrines of immunity that insulate themselves and other federal and state officials from being held accountable, for transforming judges into chancellors dependent upon the will of the bar, resolute on destroying common law, the foundation of America and who we are as a people, for closing the doors of justice, for protecting foreign bankers and subjecting the people to jurisdictions unknown, for providing for tax courts that enforce direct taxes, for providing for debtors' prisons, for demanding fees to access our courts, for demanding fees to move our courts, for collecting fines in opposed to restoring the injured party, for denying people their due process via by rule, for replacing common law with chancery courts, for depriving the people of fully informed grand juries, for depriving the people of fully informed petit juries, for arrogantly disregarding our Bill of Rights, for abolishing our most valuable laws, altering fundamentally the people's form of government without their consent, for holding mock trials in courts not of record and thereby unlawfully incarcerating and financially fleecing the people, for seizing people's property via probate courts, for impaneling bogus puppet juries and petit juries in order to perform bar will and profiteering, for assisting bankers in seizing property in REM, for incarcerating people in debtor's prison under USC 26, which is no law at all. And the process of REM, by the way, it's very important to understand what REM is. REM is a process ultimately that's used at sea against the pirates. And so what happens, they don't go after the person as far as to seize the property. They seize the property, under the law of the sea, really, and they will bring it into onto shore, in some place, on the docks. And the pirates have 30 days to come to claim that ship. And if they don't claim it, then they lose it. And they've turned that kind of a law to sea against pirates to the people. They seize people's property in REM. A lot of court cases, especially in the beginning when I got involved with this, was in REM. Ultimately, when they do the when they take away your home, whether it be by the taxes or whether it be through mortgage companies, the foreclosures, that whole process is in REM, R-E-M. And it's also, not only is it in REM, it also is not really a court, any court at all, okay? So they don't even really have a final court decision on them, it appears to be. It's all a facade. There's a couple more, only a few more, so let me finish reading this. I'll pick it right up here. For incarcerating people in debtor's prison under USC 26, which is no law at all, for transforming unalienable rights into crimes, for denying the right of the people to petition the government for a redress of grievances, for denying the right of the people in criminal cases assistance of counsel by forcing people to be represented by bar counsel, judged by bar judges, and prosecuted by bar prosecutors. The bar has totally seized control of our judicial system. And the whole process is very simple right off the bat. For what they teach alone, okay, is subversion. They teach that we're under civil law. It comes from Rome. They say that common law is trial court decisions, comedy. For imposing excessive bails and fines, for closing the doors of justice, for refusing to restore the People's Court of Justice, for warring against the Constitution, for warring against we the people, for constantly and consistently denying due process, for denying a Republican form of government protected under Article 4, Section 4, for denying the people's unalienable right to practice law, for fabricating law by its own decisions to maintain the status quo and pollute our courts of justice, which we don't have anymore, for denying the people free access into our courts. We, the jury, and the people have brought many thousands of cases and various documents before the federal judiciary, and in every case was thrown out of our courts. Okay, anyway, this is a long paper. It's 11 pages. I'm not going to read it tonight. We may have read this when we filed this. This was filed, again, against the United States, the federal judiciary. It was filed by the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And let's see what date this was done on. Get to the bottom page here. Okay, where's the date? We don't have it on this one, so. Oh, yeah, there it is, January 15, 2025. So we filed this right at the beginning of this year. And we did, of course, send the presentment of this, a copy of this with a presentment to Trump and some of his people within his administration. I know we had Bondi also when she came on board, but I don't think she was appointed till like March or something. This was done in January 2025. All right, anyway, this paper is available right here online on our front page. I think we've got about four or five papers particularly that are very important papers. Reading through them will also help you learn to read, to write. Reading any good case, you know, a lot of the Supreme Court cases, if you read those, we have a list of a few cases that are prime cases that you should be reading. You know, Marbury versus Madison, an extremely important case to read. You can learn to write from that also. You'll pull some great stuff that you can use in your case. U.S. versus Williams, again, another case, great case. It really talks particularly about the grand jury and ultimately common law. But anyway, some of the papers that we filed, redress of grievances open on natural law courts with a cover letter to President Trump and his administration. We did a presentment to President Trump and Attorney General Bondi here. We did a presentment to President Trump, another one. This is over a period of time. You can click on all these things. Let's take this one, for instance. It'll open up, and you can read through it. This one here is, let's see how many pages. This is a 29-page paper, okay? And again, you know, the best way, anybody trying to learn law, the best way to learn how to write is to read papers and read other people's papers. And then when you write a paper, you know, you need to kind of perfect it 10 times over, literally. I don't know that there's ever a paper that I file in the court that I haven't read at least 10 times. And every time you read through your papers, you'll find that you'll be able to maybe take a word or two here and change it to a different word there, change a phrase that's more accurate, more focused. You might be able to take you know, less is always more, but you got to cover everything, so you got to think about it. So you write it really where it's a lot of stuff in it, but then you try to shrink it down without losing the points. So you might have a paragraph that, let's say, has eight or ten sentences in it. You might be able to reduce it to six. You know, but you don't want to lose anything out of that, and you don't want to make it short just because you want to make it short. You can make it short because you think it's better to say it this way instead of that way. Also, you know, when you write papers, you want to use memorandums of law to back up any points that you want to make. You don't want to get too lost in the main paperwork that you're filing, which makes the case. But you'll make the main point maybe and then refer to the memorandum that covers that law that you're bringing up, the common law. And again, you learn that by reading memorandums, by reading cases, right? So we did a presentment to President Trump, an indictment upon the federal judiciary, which is what we just read a little bit of, presentment to the United States Supreme Court, and an addendum to that grand jury presentment. So anyway, and that's the only question we had there concerning the law, Jan, I guess, right? And nothing else.
Yeah, that was
okay. All right. So I guess we'll go over to the queue. Let's see if we got any, how many more people we got in the queue. Hopefully, we got a few people. Did you want to say something? Yeah.
Yes. The book asked about the court access in the common law. Will it suffice? But you talked a lot about the court access in the common law.
Right.
Is the content identical in both, or are some things missing from one or the other, or do you need both to
The book is good to have at your fingertips. It's good to even keep it in, take it to court with you, or and when you're outside thinking about different things, you can kind of flip through things that you're going to review or things you're going to bring up or whatever the case may be. The book course lays out a lot of how you write your papers as far as putting them together and how to file them and serve them. It gets into lots of forms. We got a lot of memorandums of law in here. But no, this book, the superior part of this whole thing is the course itself. That's the superior. The book does not cover everything that we have in the course. I wrote the book first, but again, when we did the course, you know, I wanted to articulate a lot of points that are not articulated in the book. The book is more of kind of a structure of list of different things, you know. It goes through causes of actions, give you all kinds of causes of actions and how to properly put them together within your paperwork. It talks about the two different courts. We get a little bit of a conversation with that. We have lots of forms in here. Almost everything you do, moving the court, there's a form for. And we have a lot of these forms in the book, of course. We have a lot of these forms on our course. You can also key words in your search engine and get a list of others. You also, in the book, I think we cover this also, but I know we cover it in the course. Basically you can go to, we might have given a few different places you can go to, for instance, in New York or New Jersey or whatever. But you could go to a lot of these, whatever state you're in, and you can download all kinds of information concerning forms. Like I know I have in my set up in my computer here where I can go. Let me see if I can get to it quickly right now. I think I have it up on top here. Court forms info right here. Okay. You got help centers and community organizations, and this is for New York Court Helps. You have forms for the New York State Courts. Let me open that up. And you can go through here. There's a tremendous amount of courts here. A tremendous amount of forms here. Okay, and you search for a particular form that you want. Now, again, this really brings things into a consistent way of bringing cases together. But you don't have to use their forms. I'll use their forms, but I usually change some things in the forms, but not all the time. But again, it's helpful, and it's put together so that there is a consistency throughout the courts, you know, through the process. And this is what's called due process, the anatomy of a court case. I cover that in the book, and of course we cover that in great detail in the course. And again, that breaks down, all of the necessary paperwork in order to do your filing. For instance, you have your summons, which is really the front page of when you're serving somebody, okay? You'll have your affidavit of service, and you might have a file on demand. I usually have one with me just in case, but I don't normally file a file on demand with my paperwork. So you have your affidavit of service and your summons. You have your pleadings, the next paper, then you have your affidavits, and then you have your memorandums, and then you have your exhibits. And that's the basic structure of a court case for filing the papers. I file everything up front. Lawyers don't like that. They get angry, and that's tough and good. Let them get angry. The thing is they don't want too much information in the beginning too quickly, because then they got to respond to it all. Okay, they want it to move slow, and they do move slow, and that's why this way they can soak a lot of money off their clients. So that's another game they're playing there. You know, when I go into a case, I put it all up front. You know, if they want to do discovery on me, that's fine. They're just going to get the same stuff because it's already done. Okay, so, and again, they don't like that, but hey, that's tough. So anything else really drags the case out. All right, I think that's all I have to say about that. See if we have anyone else in the queue right now. Okay, we got four people in the queue. All right, again, anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 6 and 1. If you're on a phone, and app or browser, should be a button. We'll take our first person. Mark, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state are you from, Mark?
You hear me,
you
John?
Hear me, John?
I can hear you. What state are you from?
Mark, Indiana.
Indiana, Mark. You got it. Go ahead.
I'm getting a reverb here. Is it me? Is it me?
Well, I'm not hearing it. Anybody else? Eric, Jan, Terry, anybody hearing reverb?
Yes, I hear a reverb. Well, his mic is reverbing.
Okay, it's not me though, right?
Let me turn it down a little bit. Is that better?
You know, sometimes if you have your mic open when you're talking and you're coming through your speakers, if you don't have a headset on, that could create that problem.
Yeah, I got a headset and a mic.
Yeah,
is that better?
That sounds better, yes.
I turned the volume down. Okay. I got two questions. First one is, I'm the one that's been calling about this sewer district in Indiana.
Right. Yep.
Okay. The state had it came back as they were supposed to dissolve, but the sewer district in my county is appealing it.
That's so, okay. When?
Huh? Pardon?
When? If they don't have an environment, I think I remember you. If they don't have an environmental impact study, they're not going to win. And do you take that into the feds? The feds will really press that.
Well, they have to go to the state to file this appeal.
Well, it's because it was a state case, and everything will be done in the state, and really the state should back up the requirements. It's the law. It's the law. You can't get away from this. An environmental impact study must be put together on any kind of a large construction, and something like the sewer system. Forget it. It's going to impact the environment, and they want to make sure that it's safe and everything works and. No problems can occur, maybe storms or different things that might come about.
That verbiage is not being discussed, even though the people
need to bring that up. Then what's being discussed?
The sewer district is not following protocol from what IDEM is asking them to do. So that's the reason they gave the decision to dissolve it, but they've already spent $1.6 million out of their $3 or $3.5 million bond that they issued, and they're still spending money, even though we've told them the county has told them to stop spending money, and they're not. They say we're not accountable to anybody, but blah blah blah. Anyhow.
What is it that's in the case that's preventing them from going forward that they have to appeal? What's the point? Is there a lake involved here also? Is there
Yes, that's the first. There's 13 different districts or phases of this, and the first one is a chain of 7 lakes.
Okay, so one of the things that I know in a case that I'm familiar with through Robert Schultz with We the People. It was one of his first real big cases, and he won that case. And it was all above. Ultimately, the case was run on the fact that they ignored the law, and it was the town ignoring the law, by the way. But the town was ignoring the law by trying to bypass the environmental impact study. Now, the environmental impact study is not only going to look at the environmental impact of the construction itself. It's also going to look at the impact on the waterways that are around there. For instance, I know in the case of Robert Schultz's case, where they were trying to make the point, one of the claims they were making and why it had to be done is because a lot of the properties that were around some of these waterways was polluting the water systems, you know, whether it be a lake, a pond, or whatever. And so one of the things that he had done is they looked in, and first of all, they got to do an impact study on that. They got to show that, okay? So, and that basically is done. They'll go test some waters, grab some water, put it in the tubes, throughout various locations, throughout all these different waterways, marking them, you know, very specifically on where that water was collected from. And then they'd send it down to the health department. The health department would then look into the water to see if there was any pollutants in there, any kind of a problem, or and give the specific makeup of that particular water. You know, they do that whenever you do a well, you have to do that kind of test, take the water down, you know, some water down to the health department.
The water's been tested on the lakes. Actually, the last lake that all the other six lakes run into, and the water's fine.
Okay, that's you see, that's the big one of the big things there, because I know with Schultz's case, they were making it had to be done. We got to do this, you know, that kind of thing. But that's fine. That's number one. Okay, so that everything's fine. So there's really no reason right now for it. Now, of course, they may be looking at growth, and they need to expand something because they'll maybe do some apartment buildings or something of that.
Yes, the people on the board have property around the lakes, and they want to have condos.
Okay. All right, so now the thing with this, well, the people on the board, that's a conflict of interest there, huh?
Also, one of them owns a sewer company. Yes.
They go again on that, yeah. It's all, look, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, okay, that an environmental impact study wasn't done. I'll bet you that.
No, we know it wasn't done. Yes,
but
we've asked.
And that's what you win the case on. If they didn't bring that up, shame on them.
Okay.
Who's challenging this?
Well, the county's challenging it, the county council, the county commissioners, and the people in the county.
And I suppose all of those, that, you know, that particular, government, county government, is going up against the town government? Is that the case? The town is fighting the town?
Is going up against the regional sewer board.
Okay, but who's pushing it to go forward? Is it the town or just a private organization?
Just the sewer board. That's the only one. It's the only entity.
Then they shouldn't be able to get away with that. If it somehow gets through, it's because something happened and you'd want to move it to federal court. And again, I don't know that whoever's doing this, you know, an individual could move it into federal court if they are impacted by this situation.
That was my bottom line question is basically the people are relying on the county's attorney, either the attorney from the commissioners or the attorney from the county council, and then also the IDM's attorneys. So the people aren't really involved, even though we had petitions and letters and blah, blah, blah. The people aren't really unified, but the county government knows that the people are not for this, of course. But is there anything...
That has a lot of power and clout in this whole thing is the engineer, whoever done the engineering. Now, the engineering, it sounds like the engineering is done if they've spent $1 million.
Yes. They're at every board meeting, yes, the engineer.
So they got this. And that's the question. Again, I don't know how you can come in, and become part of the case as an individual as long as you're impacted. And you could just file your filings with the, within the case, and you can bring up the points that you want to bring up. But before, of course, you bring these points up, you want to go to the engineer and you want to say, well, where's the environmental impact study? You know, you say you already know that they don't have it.
Yeah.
But you got to make sure.
I've asked him. I asked him during a board meeting.
And he doesn't
have it. He just evaded the answer, yes.
Okay, because they don't have it. Yeah, they like to get, because that costs a lot of money. That environmental impact study could cost more than the engineering of the project itself. It could get very involved. I mean, there's a lot to be looked at, a lot of impacts, and, you know, easements to go through and all that other stuff, which I'm sure they already, you know, got all that together if they got engineering plans already done. I mean, it's not just the sewage treatment plant in itself. It's also... that which leads to it, you know, the piping.
What would you do? What would you recommend what the people can do?
Well, first of all, you have to understand how due process works. You have to understand how you can enter into the court case because you are impacted by that court case. And then the key thing is having an understanding of what's required, which, again, is the impact studies. The environmental impact studies, and if they don't exist, that's the main point that you want to look at. You will find in law, local law, let me think about this. It would probably be a state law. I'm sure it is. Yeah, it would be a state law. So you'd be able to go in and research the law that requires that impact study. And that's a slam dunk. Case is over. You bring that in. Hey, these guys, you can't move any further until this is done. They got to go out and spend the money to do that.
Okay. I'll keep going. I got one more other question. I can come out and come back in, or do you want me to answer it now?
Yeah, go ahead. Bye. Go ahead.
Okay. I have my own business. I did a job for a customer, and I think the owner that owns that company filed Chapter 11. I got a letter of the United States Bankruptcy Court, blah, 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 blah. You know, it gives all the debtors and everything. What can I do?
Well, you're a business. Someone else filed bankruptcy, and they owe you money?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they owe me money.
As a contractor, or
yes, what? Yes, I did the job, but I still have the job in my possession. I have not delivered it yet.
You're doing site work or
no,
frame construction?
It's like tool and die work. I go there, pick up a job, then I bring it to my shop, and I work on it, fix it, repair it, and you know, most of it's time and material. But they wanted this quoted, so I quoted it. And then it was sitting here for 30 days, and I says, it's ready to be delivered. I just need payment. And
Did you do a mechanics lien?
No, I do that. Okay.
You want to do is, first of all, when did they file for bankruptcy?
September 29th. The job was done and ready to be picked up on August 1st.
Okay, did you get a copy of the filings?
Yes, they sent
okay.
it to me.
It should list out their assets and what kind of monies they have on the one hand. And on the other hand, you know, they should be listing out, you know, what they owe out, which is all of their creditors. And you should be able to, you should probably know those two numbers, the bottom line numbers on that. That could work out a ratio of payment back, because, you see, if there is anything that they can seize in the bankruptcy, then maybe you can get 20% or 50% or 80%, depending on what they have in assets. I suppose it's not too much, because...
Well, on this thing they sent me, there is 111 debtors on here.
Okay.
And one of those 111 debtors is the company I did business with.
Let me think about this. So in other words, you're coming in as a third party at this point. There was the one company that went bankruptcy. Okay, there's the other one, and that bankrupt that was coming in went bankruptcy, owed money to a debtor, which is another company, and that company owed you money, and so it's you're like on the third tier down, right?
Yes, I do believe so. Yes.
Okay, so. That's a good question. You know, I'd have to think and do research on that, because I think you know, just because someone else didn't pay me, that doesn't relieve me from paying you. Okay? There may be a way they can tie you into that bankruptcy, but I don't know enough about that to be able to comment on that. But that's something you want to look into.
Look
up the bankruptcy laws, okay, to begin with.
Well, in this paper, it did say something that the filing of the case imposes an automatic stay against most collection activities. This means that creditors generally may not take action to collect debt from the debtor or the debtor's property, for example, while the stay is in effect.
Right, in the process of time. You know, I was... I was doing construction management. This is a case I did maybe about 20 years ago. And what happened was the developer didn't pay the contractor. It was a site contractor, and I was doing construction management for them. And the site contractor didn't get paid, okay? Now, in the process of trying, and this was a huge contract, and in the process, his creditors were coming out after him, and he couldn't pay them, okay? And had a meeting with a couple of the different individuals involved with this contractor, and and a lawyer. And a lawyer came up with a brilliant plan. And that was, he said, what you got to do is we got to sue the individual. You know, they owe your money. We're going to sue them. But all of your creditors, you want to sue them too. Not that you're going to win anything off of them, because you can't. You owe them money. They don't owe you. But that tied everyone in and prevented them from collapsing this guy, forcing him into bankruptcy. Now, he was chasing money from a company, the developers, but that wasn't a bankruptcy case. Okay, that particular case was a situation. There was a disagreement. It was an engineering problem, ultimately, that took place, elevational problems. They tried to put it off onto the contractor. And that's why I had gotten involved in the arguments and the debates, trying to lay out who was really at fault on this. But he ended up winning the case. The only problem was in a lot of the people he did business with. You know, he had good relationship with them, and he had to sue them. But the lawyer said, you can't tell them what you're really doing, okay? Because the suing just prevents them from taking action against you any further until that case is done. And, of course, when that case gets completed, then the money would flow and everybody get paid and everybody would be happy campers, you know. But so he couldn't really tell anyone what the plan was. You know, everybody was perplexed. Why are you suing me, you know? But again, they all made out at the end of the day. There could be something like that involved here. So the bottom line was this, in this particular case, now this wasn't bankruptcy, remember, in this particular case, if he lost his case against the developer who he did the site work for, then he still is liable to pay all of his creditors, okay, even though all that stuff went to that job. So it's probably the same thing with a bankruptcy. So you want to look into that. I don't see why that would change.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next caller. Brett. How you doing, Brett? You got the mic. Give me your state.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Brett from Wisconsin.
Yes. just wondering, can one be compelled to come into court when it's if it says mandatory, and what makes it mandatory?
What, were you commanded to go to court?
For an appearance, yeah.
Right. What are you, they looking at you as a witness, or were you being commanded? If you're being commanded, you better go, because it puts you in jail if you don't go.
Okay, it's, yes, traffic.
Oh, yeah. I would do. Look, have you been in court for it before, or just this one, or you're just entering in for the first time, potentially?
No, this is the first time. Excuse me.
Okay. All right. What you're going to want to do, let's see. Are you seeing my desktop?
Yes.
Okay. Under here, on the website, nationallibertyalliance.org, go over to Education Starts Here. Come down to law, okay, and then when you come to law, you come over and you want to hit court forms and process. And under court forms and process, I put together a procedure for dealing with these people, but remember, you're going to be moving them into different courts. You have to understand how those courts work. You have to understand how due process works, how the paper flow goes. And you have to understand what you're suing for, and you got to be careful not to go beyond what you're really trying to prove, and that is the denying you due process. You see, when you get a traffic ticket, that ticket makes you guilty. You know, that's over. You're guilty, and that's it. That denies due process. Same thing with a code. That's why they can't use a code against you, a statute. Because the statute, if you broke that statute, then you're automatically guilty. You're not getting due process. It's an automatic by just really, in that case, from a statute, it's a legislative process. Okay? It's not a due process. So that court that you're going into, traffic court, doesn't have that. By the way, is that county, town, city?
County.
County, okay. Remember, there are lots of jurisdictions, and even though county courts, you should go look up in your constitution, your Wisconsin constitution, and in that constitution, it should list out all the courts that are courts of record, okay? County courts usually are courts of record. I know they are here in New York, okay? Town courts, village courts, city courts, they are not courts of record. Here in New York, with the exception of New York City courts, they are courts of record. Okay, I know all that because that's what the Constitution tells me when I look it up. So it's that simple. So you go in there and you find out it probably is a court of record. Excuse me. Now, court of record is that which proceeds according to the common law, which they're not going to proceed that way. But the point is that's one jurisdiction. Now, you're in a traffic court jurisdiction. Okay, a traffic court jurisdiction is a court, a civil law court that proceeds according to statutes. You need to deny that because statutes deny due process. So the fact that it's not just the statutes that's denying due process, that court is denying you due process. Because I'll tell you what they'll do. They all seem to do the same thing. I'm sure sometimes it's not this way, but generally I've seen it most of the times this way. You walk into a court, you challenge jurisdiction, you say, Judge, this court doesn't have jurisdiction, and I move the court for dismissal. And the judge will say, well, we do have jurisdiction. I just gave myself jurisdiction. Well, I make the argument, well, Judge, you know, and I don't do this by... in person. I do this on writing now. I don't go into the court. I follow my paperwork if I have to go into the court, but my court, my papers go first, and that's what I'm going to show you in a minute. But so you're going into that court, and he's going to give himself due process, and you're going to say, well, Your Honor, the court, once jurisdiction is challenged, okay, number one, it has to be proven this way, therefore it has to be heard. And he'll say, well, I just heard it, and I'm saying we have jurisdiction. Let's move on. Stop it. Okay, that's what's going to happen, that kind of an argument, in most likely cases anyway. Okay, so they're going to take jurisdiction on their own. Well, that's why I do everything by paper. Okay, and if I do end up going into the courtroom, which I try to stay out of it, okay, and just stick with paperwork, then if I have to go in, I'll make sure all my paperwork is in. And the bottom line is I have your affidavit, I have my jurisdictional challenge, I have my paper, the fact that I've come in to take care of my own business, I'm in personam, all that paperwork I needed, I file it into the courts. Now I go into the court if I have to for the one time. And if I go into that court, in my case, the only point I'd make is, look, I already filed a paper of challenge of jurisdiction. The law requires a jurisdiction that must be put on the top of all courts, and there's nothing here. It doesn't tell me what jurisdiction I'm in. But because you're giving me a traffic citation, I go online, you make the list, it's the state laws usually, state traffic. So therefore, here it is, here's the jurisdiction. This has nothing to do with me. This applies only to commercial activities. I've already made my points in the papers. So I filed all my papers, and the prosecutor has not responded back, to rebut my paperwork. Therefore, this court has no choice but to rule on the affidavit before it. An affidavit unrebutted rules the court and the subject. That's the law. They're still not going to let you go. These people just don't stop. But I'm not going back into that court again. I leave that court and I let the court know that we'll look at. I'm not going to come back here anymore because they'll reset another date. They're going to try to get you into a trial and all that craziness. But I let it know, be known that we're going to be moving this court case. I was planning on just moving it into the federal courts, but I move it into the state court first, and that gives me another bite at the apple. The state court's probably going to go along with them, but maybe not. Who knows? But after that point, you move it into federal court. But your argument in those two courts has nothing to do with the case against you. It has to do with the case against that court denying you due process. That's the key, a denial of due process. And that's what you're going to sue for. Now you're going to sue for monetary, you want to get some money out of this. And I usually sue for $1,000 in face Morgan Silver dollars, face value $1,000, and I define that very clearly. So right now, and that's for every violation against me, every denial of any of my rights. So if there's the prosecutor and the judge, if you're suing both of them, yeah, it's $1,000 apiece. But that's in, again, Morgan Silver dollars, face value. Now, silver right now, I think it's up around $50. I mean, I haven't been paying attention, but it's been going pretty high. So when you think about that, you know, $1,000, if it's $50 an ounce, that's $50,000. That's a lot of money. But in any event, you know, I always, that's the process I use. Now, usually you lose in the courts because they throw you out. They find all kinds of things to, you know, they make up lies. And even when, I've gone into the court, you know, with paperwork. You know, I try to stay out of the court, do as much as I can by paperwork. And, you know, so these people will interpret my writing and it'll be just nothing but a bunch of lies and incorrect conclusions. And then I'd write a paper laying out the fact that, you know, that this person's lying. This is not truth. I try to be very careful about how I say it. But the bottom line is the judge will use the paperwork, never even look at my papers. Maybe they do, but they don't acknowledge it. And then he'll write his decision and refer to every lie that the attorney put on the other side. He'll be relying on that in order to end the case and throw me out. It's constant over and over and over again. But then you have your next step, and it's the federal courts, you know. But you got the same problem up there. You know, this is the purpose of National Liberty Alliance, trying to save the republic. You know, people have become a little complacent. People have become, lately particularly, you know, a little touchy. They want justice, everything. They want it now. Now there's a lot of fighting out there. You know, to some degree, we have factions within ourselves, and we've become them. Okay, calling each other names. This is what I'm seeing right now. What's going on out there? It's really kind of crazy. And so we've caused our own problem. And why is this? What's going on? Why is that happening? Because people don't understand what's really going on. Okay, everybody wants to know. Why don't we have the information on Charlie's assassination? Why don't we have all the information on Cooks out there in Pennsylvania trying to kill Trump, almost assassinated Trump? Well, what about that other guy? Why don't we have? How come nothing's going on? How come we don't know about what's going on with that pedophile? They don't understand is two things. Number one, it takes time to put everything together. You got a lot of cases, and they all connect. It's all together. That and much, much more is connected to subversion. Okay, treason. That's what it's all about. That's number one. Number two, timing is everything. You know, Trump's got this stuff going back to his last election. You know, after he lost the battle in the 2020 election. He made it clear. We caught them. We caught them all. We got all the evidence. Well, that's goodness. 5 years ago. Okay, we got all the evidence. That's 5 years ago. Well, the problem is the people aren't ready for it. They won't understand it. They don't understand it right now. Why? Because we're ignorant to who we are as a people. We don't realize, and we're a moral nation. We're founded under Christianity. Jesus Christ is the King of our courts. King's bench is the jury. It's the process set up. And again, we have to do the will of God. That's the point, okay, of natural law. And so there is a process we got to go through. But a lot of people, they don't understand those things. And they don't understand it takes time to put a court case together. They don't understand that, especially all that's involved. This is huge. This is a huge conspiracy going down into every state of this union, into all of these different, governments, you know, at every level. This corruption is huge. Okay. So the other thing is that people have to be ready to accept it. I mean, you could see what they're doing now. You know, they're trying to talk about Trump is trying to come out and giving unlawful orders to the military, and he's going to do. You see, they know what's coming down, and that's why they're doing that. And now, so there's a, you know, we're combating that. Trump is coming out, his administration coming out, laying the facts out, making the points, and trying to really, you know, smother their position. So this is the big problems that we have, okay? And so you, when you go back into the courts, again, things take time. You have to understand what's going on. You have to understand due process. If you're going to move into federal courts, you have to understand how federal courts work, how they're structured. It's, due process is the same in that court than any other court, but there are a few things that are different. You have to know how to deal with their rules. You have to know how to make the arguments against all the things they'll throw at you. And that takes experience. But even if you go out and get yourself a lawyer, okay, well, you need to control that lawyer. So maybe you can't do the battle, but you can have the basic knowledge enough to know what needs to be done. And therein is the purpose of the course. Therein is the purpose of the book that I wrote. And there's another book that I wrote, if you're going to move into a federal court. Let's see, coming to books by John Arash. It's Understanding the Federal Courts. It's a short book. It's not too much. And basically, due process is the same. Where is this book? Understanding the Federal Court, right here. Okay. And so anybody that's going to go into federal court, I suggest that you get a hold of this book. Okay. So anyway, I'm trying to think where the points we want to get to now at this point. Where's your question at, so I can recall?
So going,
you're in the court. You got to go into the court. You're being summoned, right?
Yeah.
All right. As I was going through here, I didn't get to it. This is where I really wanted to go to. I guess I got to come back here. Go to Education Starts Here. Come down to Law and come over to Court Forms and Process. And this is the process I put together. Let's see. Common Law Trust, Instruction Forms. Here's Traffic Court right here, okay? When I go, when they get me anything, anytime they if I get a ticket, I don't get tickets too often because I have a what do you call it? It's what they call that thing, a radar detector, okay? So, you know, they usually don't get me for speeding. But in any event, when I do go in, you got to file on demand. You're probably going to, I would use that in a town court, village court. Any court that has a jurisdiction, a traffic court, I'd use that. That's the jurisdiction you're in. They don't have jurisdiction over you. So you have the file on demand, okay? You have the appearance ticket, okay? You have the notice of motion. You have the verified jurisdictional challenge, okay? Those are the four main pieces. Papers that you want to file into that court. So you can look at these and pretty much use it, you know, however you want to use it and just make it yours. Okay. Then you want to prepare an affidavit of default. And you want to have a copy of violations and codes. You probably want to have that into the paperwork that you're filing. And you have another paper which you might use as moving to state court. And then you have your traffic court argument, which I wouldn't really make much of an argument in the court itself. My paperwork would do everything that has to be made. But remember, it's a jurisdictional challenge. That is the point. You don't talk about nothing else but jurisdiction. They don't have the authority to hear the case. They don't have personam jurisdiction over you. Yes, they do have subject matter jurisdiction because they can hear cases and commercial cases under that jurisdiction. But you can't pull me into that court because I'm not operating under commercial codes. You see, that's your argument, is due process only. You don't want to argue that you're not under the codes or any of those things. You make your point once, leave it alone. Your point is you're giving me due process. You have to understand due process. And I think the verified jurisdictional challenge, this paper here, let's take a look at it real quick, okay? This paper here... 8 pages, okay? It lays it out. that they're denying you due process, that you can't get due process in that court. Okay? So
I wouldn't change anything on that paper?
No, well, you might want to change some things. I mean, you could pretty much use it pretty much the way it is, just make it yours, make it personal. You know, other than that, you could use pretty much the same, it's almost a form paper. But, you know, you want to look at anybody who doesn't know how the court system works, you should know. We should have learned this in school. You know, we should always have been able to take care of our legal things. You know, our heritage is in the law, and our inheritance is liberty. And if you don't know the law, you don't know your heritage. And if you don't know your heritage, you can't protect or defend your liberties. I mean, it's all connected, you know. Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So you gotta know the law. You should have learned this in school, but they didn't teach it to us. We need to get it into school. But meanwhile, we out of school a long time, we need to learn this stuff. That's why I did the course. People should take the course. You never know when a situation comes up and you're going to head into court. Now, you may not feel that you can talk very well, so maybe you can't articulate yourself very well. Maybe particularly in a courtroom, particularly, you may feel intimidated. You may not have enough ability or understanding to have the ability to articulate yourself in a court. But you need to understand how things work. The course will give you at least that, and you'll know when something's wrong. And then when you hire a lawyer, okay, now you can control that lawyer because you know what's going on. Lawyers will run your case, and more times than not even give you a copy of the paperwork they're filing. Okay, they don't even inform you a lot of times about the paperwork or the conversations or the conclusions in some of these hearings that they have. Okay, and especially if things are going bad, they'll hide it from you. They'll try to extend it out as long as they can. You know, they want to make more money. Every time they go into court, write a paper, it's more money. But you need to be involved in that. You need to approve his paperwork. They're not going to like this, you know, I don't know whether you even find a lawyer that'll do that for you, but maybe you will. But you need to know what's going on. And so anyway, everybody should know how to defend themselves in a court.
So by going there, being compelled to show up there physically, that doesn't give them per solem jurisdiction?
If you make a plea, it gives you per solem jurisdiction, and that's what they're going to try to make you do, is make a plea. That's what they're calling you in for. When did you get the ticket, and when is the court date?
It came in the mail Friday, and
and when did you get the ticket?
The 20th of November. So.
Okay, so it's not long ago. Okay, what I would do is this. Okay, and they will always they'll go along with this until they discover that you're a pain in the rear end and you're a troublemaker. Until they discover that, they're going to be nice to you. Okay, what I would do is call up and you call up the clerk in the court. You call the court up, you'll get the clerk, and you say, look, I have some situations in life going on. I have a ticket, and I'm just not going to be able to get in. You know, until next month sometime, okay? They will push it out 30 days, all right? And this is critical, though. You want to get this paperwork together now. After you get the approval of that, okay, then you file all of these papers together and you serve it in, you literally serve it into the court. You want to get, you want to get proof of service, all right? But you get it to that court. And you get a copy, you find out who the prosecutor is, you get a copy to them. Okay, so you send out two. You can do it to the prosecutor care of the court if you can't find it. A case I'd done recently, actually it was just about a year ago, but I went after the prosecutor, and the prosecutor on the court pages, he was actually retired. He was no longer working. He was 3 months out. And they never changed it. So I sued that prosecutor. Okay, I found out later, so I then had to correct the paperwork and sue the right person. That created a problem. But in any event, you need to find the prosecutor, and you want to confirm the fact that they haven't retired or anything, you know. So you want to get a copy to that person, you want to get a copy to court, and you want to do it, you want to serve it. Like I said, you want to do an affidavit of service. You could do it through the mail, or the best way to do it, I'll tell you, is to have a sheriff serve the paper. I know sheriffs, it could be $25-$50 somewhere. It's been a while, but I think the last time I did with a sheriff about a year ago, I think it was $50. But different counties are different, whatever it is, to the service. Or you could just do it by mail and have someone do a sworn affidavit of service concerning being deposited into the mail, sent out. You get all that information here and in the course. But the thing is this, here's the key, okay? You want to default them because they will default. When they get this paperwork, they're going to say, who is this guy? You know, now you're a problem. Now, that doesn't leak up to the clerk necessarily, but that's going to be between the prosecutor and the judge. Eventually, the clerk's going to know that you're a pain in the neck, too. But right now, they wouldn't know because there's no reason for them to know. All right? So you got your 30 days to work on this. Maybe you get it out in 5 days or less, and it's 25 days, and they haven't answered. Now you make your second call to the clerk, and maybe you got a bad cold or the flu or something, I don't know, and you need to push out a week or two. Whatever it is that brings you to the 30-day mark. Because what you're looking to do is you're serving the papers, they're not going to rebut it, they're going to fail, you're going to then file a paper of default and file that into the court. Now, if you have to go into the court, that's your position right there. Look at you. You got. You know, he defaulted. The prosecutor defaulted. Okay, he didn't answer. My affidavit, unrebutted, is truth in a court of law. So, if you're going to rule, in order for this to go forward, this jurisdiction has to be heard. And ultimately, that judge can't hear the jurisdiction because they already believe they've got it. Okay, so definitely if they rule on it against you without an argument from the other side, that shows bias and it proves the fact that they're just railroading you, okay, because they didn't give you the due process again, and that's why now you sue the judge and the prosecutor, okay? So the next thing you do is when they don't respond is you move it to the state court for cause. And it's for denial of due process. That's the only thing you argue there. Then you can, at some point, you can take that up to the appellate, and if you have to, you can move it into the federal court for cause. So you got a lot of bites at the apple, so to speak, with this. And you might get someone who'll do the right thing. You know,
Judge. So the traffic court, does that not get filed?
Or? I'm sorry, you broke a little bit. Traffic court what?
The traffic court argument, does that get filed or no? And those
you never make a traffic court argument. Never. I don't talk about the ticket at all, only the fact that that it's under civil law has nothing to do with me. It's commercial activity, and its jurisdiction is a traffic court jurisdiction. Okay, and you can pull that off your state, and you can if you look on your ticket, okay, it'll have the information that it's a traffic court ticket or commercial, whatever the words are, I forget. But then you just go on and you put in, you take that violation, because they'll give you the violation, usually has a number next to it and a name of whatever the violation is, speeding, for instance, you know, passing the light without stopping, whatever. Okay, so you'll get a number and a name of that, and you look into the state a commercial code on that, in your state, and you just run that number, and you'll be able to find it on a list. And you print off the list, and I highlight the code, and that's the proof of the jurisdiction on the top, traffic court, commercial, nothing to do with me, Judge. I don't make any arguments. I don't get any further than that. Anything further than that, it's the question is you know, do you want to fight or do you want to win, okay? If you want to fight, make an argument. Eventually, you'll hopefully move to a jurisdictional challenge. I mean, why spend the time wasting your time when there's no need to argue the point at all? You win on a denial of due process, they have to cease and desist. Get out of here. Court can't come after you no more. Plus, they owe you money. So, anything else? What I strongly suggest is this: you know, you got to respond, look at this, see if you feel comfortable with it to do it. And I strongly suggest, and you know, everyone, if you don't have a problem now, believe me, at some point in life you will have a problem, and you'll deal with the courts, most likely. Okay, everyone should take this court access in the common law. You'll spend $200,000 to learn how this process works, through a bar school or some kind of other law school. Of course, there's jurisdictionary out there, but he doesn't teach like we teach. He's a lawyer. He's a bar attorney. And then there's us. And we only charge $125. So you're getting an education, $200,000 education, really, for $125.
I was just going to ask, on the jurisdictional challenge, it has petitioner and respondent. Do those stay the same? Would I be a petitioner if I'm challenging it, or would it be...
No, I'm not a petitioner. I'll never petition the court about anything. I'm going in under actions, under the common law. I'm opening a court of record. And I'm going to call it an action at law. I'm not going to call it a complaint. I'm not petitioning the court. I'm not praying the court. I'm not asking the court.
What are you coming in as?
Well, let's open it up. I come in pro per.
Okay, because it says, how I would say plaintiff and defendant, it says it has petitioner and respondent there. So.
Right. Well, here's a petitioner and a respondent. I probably should update this. Okay, the respondent is this and the petitioner is, but I'm turning it into a court of record. I don't think it's wise at this point to make it a defendant, make them defendants yet, just a respondent. So I guess at this point, keep it as a respondent. But the bottom line at the end of the day, at the bottom of your paper, I got in pro per, which is in my own person, okay? They have pro se, and pro se, I believe, means self-representation. I'm not representing myself. I am myself. I'm in pro per. I'm in my own person. That's why I do that. Okay? So you can do this paperwork exactly the way it's laid out. You might change a few things. You're going to put your town, your village court, all the information, the name of the court, your name, their name, so on and so forth, okay? Now, once you move into the next court, now you become the plaintiff, and they become the defendant. You're going to open up a court of record. You're going to define a court of record right here. Number one, a court of record is a judicial tribunal having the attributes and exercising the function independently of the person of the magistrate designated generally to hold it, and proceeding according to the course of the common law, its acts and proceedings being enrolled for a perpetual memorial. Lawyers have no clue what a court of record is. They really think a court of record is a court that gives a record. And it is true, it does keep a record, but it's a real record. It's a record of substance in the sense because it's a common law procedure. That's why. It's a justice court. And right now my thinking, I've changed recently, is I'm using the words natural law instead of common law. I'll use the word natural law and then put AKA common law, and I'll define it. And now I'll define natural law under the foundation of American law found in the Declaration of Independence, where we are under the laws of nature and of nature's God, thereby natural law. And then I'll go back and refer, I think it's in Article 4 of the Constitution, where it talks about law and equity. And then I think it's in 6, I recall, in the Constitution, where that talks about the law of the land. All three is connected. The point is, the law, L-A-W, in the Constitution is natural law. It is common law. when you go into, if you go into Black's Law Dictionary, there are 51 jurisdictions, okay? One of those jurisdictions is law, L-A-W. Law is that which proceeds according to the common law, a.k.a. natural law. All the other jurisdictions have different names, okay? So they have different jurisdictions. And none of those have any application to us. The only thing that applies to us is the natural law. That's the key. So you're making that point, and even I referred to this with a Supreme Court ruling in Black's Law, right here. A court of record, I just read all this, and then at the end of it, it says Black's Law, quoting Jones versus Jones, and it gives that information. Ex parte, Glad Hill, another case, and see also Ludwitz versus Rosaliski, I guess it is, or whatever. So there's three Supreme Court rulings there, plus the definition in Black Law that makes clear what the meaning of a court of record is. Okay? So I also put this in Word so that, you know, the footnotes and everything will come along with it. If you use a PDF and you're trying to write your own papers, you got to reset all your footnotes in your Word. So you can do the Word, download the Word side, and all the footnotes will follow you. Footnotes are extremely important in your battle in courts because it makes clear your position, the meaning of words, the meaning of... And I do memorandums sometimes. In this case, I don't do memorandums with this. I may do a memorandum if I'm fighting it in a due process case in a federal court, you know. But generally speaking, you know, you don't need memorandums here. But you do want to define everything. Look at here. This is a sworn statement. It means it's an affidavit form. And there's a footnote number two. And an affidavit, uncontested, unrebutted, unanswered, stands as truth. Black's Law, quoting United States versus Kiss. I think there's another one, cert, I'm not sure what that is, the other one. But anyway, there is a Supreme Court ruling there, and it is a definition from Black's Law what an affidavit is, okay? And when you bring these things up to these people, they just don't seem to have been taught any of this stuff. They're so focused in on their civil law, which is rock solid and moves toward positions which calls the, you know, which is legislative law, which is a rock solid positions and points. There's no wiggling room. Everyone's guilty, and that's that. That's why you're not getting due process. And that's why you're challenging due process. I'm a human being. I'm under the laws of nature and of nature's God. I'm not under positive law. Positive law is legislative law, also called equity, E-Q-I-T-Y. Okay, and that's what you'll find in the Constitution, equity and law. Equity is for them. Anybody dealing with you know, a case that's dealing with someone working for some government agency or commercial activities that's controlled by regulations, which we gave them the power and the authority to do, Article 1 on the federal level and also on the state levels. And so, you know, we've given them that authority for that, but we're not under any of those things. They can't apply that against us. We're under natural law. Okay, and I did a memorandum on natural law. You can find that in, you should be able to find that in the book, Court Access in the Common Law. I'm sure you'll find it also in, I know you will, in our court course. You'll also find it in, I put those memorandums, some of these memorandums in Government by Consent book, and also I did a book, Memorandums of Law. And you'll find it in there, too. So, education is the key. You can prepare for your case, you know, but if you're learning, you can go through, look, it's a 90-hour course, okay? So you can govern yourself and say, hey, I can get through this course in a month, maybe, you know? If you're going to, if it's 90 hours, so... let's see, that's what, 30 times 30, right? Is that right? Let me see. So that's 30 times 30. What am I thinking? Okay, let's take it's a 90-hour course divided by 30. Okay, can that be right? No. 90 hours divided by 3. Okay, so 30, yes. So in theory, if you did one a day for 30 days, okay, you can get through the course. And that's sitting at a desk or whatever, going through your computer, watching, opening the forms, listening in. It's a video course, so you'll see everything that's going on, and you get familiar with stuff. So if you do that, and it takes 30 days to go through the course, let's say, then you have all these audios, which you can play while you're in your car, or when you're doing something that's kind of mindless, putting on a headset or whatever, okay? You won't need the video anymore because you already went through the video. And then you can make notes and go back and look at the video particularly, or look at the chart that's referring to whatever forms or paperwork or whatever it is that I'm showing on, that you can get a copy of that, of course, on the table of contents, which everything is downloadable. So you can get the information there. What I'm trying to say is this. If you're really intense on it, in 90 days, you can understand the structure of the court, you can understand what due process is all about, you can understand how to write papers and what should be in those papers and what papers necessary to make your filings or your response, okay? So you'll know all of that. The only thing you're going to lack at that point, and you'll be working on that at the same time anyway, is writing, okay? All the forms are there. You can use the court forms, you can use your own forms, you can make up your form. They don't like that, but I do it anyway. And that's that. Well, actually, I usually use their forms. I just make changes sometimes in their forms. They don't even know that. They don't even realize it. Yeah, they never pick up on anything because they don't read. They're lazy. And everything is already in the fix. It's all about money. Status quo. Huh. All right. Anyway, any questions on any of those things? And again, look, this is recorded. This is video recorded. Everything we are talking about here could be reheard at any time. You can go to today's issues, come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, okay? And you can watch the videos here. Tonight's program will be uploaded tonight by midnight. So that'll be up here. And you can go back and re-listen to, because I know I'm talking quick on the one hand. A lot of this is new material for a lot of people. So, you know, you can get it all here. Okay. Also, you know, I'm commercial free on Rumble. I'm commercial free on YouTube. But I noticed that when you click the buttons here, okay, you may start to get the commercials. If you're commercial free, you can click and go and watch it on Rumble, so you don't have to listen to commercials, because they do throw the commercials in there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Again, we still have got two people left in the queue. If someone else wanted to get into the queue, we could take on another person. So, Ross, you got the mic. Go
Hi,
ahead.
John.
How you doing?
Hi, John. Good.
Good.
You said you tried Grok AI from Elon Musk.
You said something about AI?
Yes.
What about it? You want to use AI to understand or learn or write or do things?
No, yes. I was just saying, you said you, last Monday, you said you tried out the AI from Elon Musk.
Yes. From what I understand, Grok is supposed to be the best. I don't know if that's true or not. that's what Musk says. And I kind of tend to believe him. But they're all status quo. I asked Grok some questions on law. And it's amazing, because I tell you what, I throw all kinds of materials in there, and I've done this on other subject matters, and it worked pretty well. I had a problem, and it told me to take a snapshot of my page where I'm trying to get to, and throw that in because it wasn't giving me the right answer. And I was able to look and evaluate and read that and then come back with an answer. And it's quick. I mean, in seconds they come. It's unbelievable. Second comes with the information. Now, I threw a court case in there recently to ask Grok, well, what's my next step? Okay? And Grok responded back very quickly. Gave me a lot of stuff, but very quickly, and said, you know, I'm not a lawyer, you know, I'm not giving you legal advice. I said, of course I know that, I'm not a lawyer either. But what I did find is they maintain the status quo, okay? I went searching in on the 13th Amendment, the original 13th Amendment, and it gave me the BS story that were given by lawyers or people who are in the know to some degree that there was a 13th Amendment claiming that it was never ratified. Okay, which is not true. So then I fed those documents of proof into Grok, okay, you know, because I'm in the conversation still on the 13th Amendment saying that it wasn't ratified, so on and so forth. I fed the documents in, still maintain the status quo, okay? It's not responding. So you can't trust Grok on a lot of things, but it's a very powerful program that you can use it in a different way. For instance, I have a list of codes, U.S. codes particularly, concerning subversion that could be applied upon individuals who are working for the government. So I asked Grok to give me a list of all codes, U.S. codes, that deal with subversion. And it popped a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, a lot of it I had, but some of it I didn't have. So in that way, you can get information that's out there that's real quick. But you got to be careful if you're looking for a bottom line conclusion, especially in law, in religion, let's see, what else, in the political process, those three particularly, okay, you're going to get the status quo. I'd be surprised if you don't. So far, I've gotten the status quo on those kind of questions when I'm looking for conclusions you know, that's really out there, and they should have, but it's not happening.
Yes, Greenback is creating an AI.
What about AI?
Greenback is creating an AI called the Torch, or Torch.
What?
Yeah, the Torch, yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand.
It's a AI will teach you about the Constitution and that stuff.
Well, again, you can get... I wouldn't trust AI on conclusions of law, conclusions of God, and conclusions of the political... well, you probably get pretty decent stuff on the political process to some degree, but there's things that, you know, you wouldn't... well, I'm not too sure on that one there, but I don't think it's trustworthy. You got to take it with a grain of salt, and you got to do your own research in some things. But again, it's a tool that can be used to get information that's, you know... Again, here's the situation. You're a lawyer, okay? You're picking up a new case, and it's a case, let me think what it might be, choose any kind of a case, I don't know. Now you want to do some research. Is there any decisions on the Supreme Court that I could use to be helpful? Is there anything in Black's Law or Bouvier's that I can use? Is there any other documents out there in history that could be helpful that I can get certified and use? Is there any conversations by founding fathers? What's going on in the federal, the Federalist Papers on this? Anything that'll help me there? Okay, so that's research. Okay, and that takes a lot of time. I've spent 15 years of research. Okay, and I'm still researching. But now you find Grok, boy. You throw, you know, it's like if you're a lawyer and you come in, you're looking at this new case and you want to gather all this information, you come into the office and you got your paralegal secretary and say, hey, look, I got a case on this here, find me everything. You don't have to get into details on it with her because they know. You're looking for Supreme Court stuff. They're not looking for Federalist Papers. They're not looking for constitutional stuff. They're not looking for natural law stuff. But they are looking for Supreme Court cases. They're looking for trial court cases. They're looking for statutes because they think we're under civil law. And so that paralegal secretary will gather all that information. It might take days or whatever, a lot of time, there's a lot of research, and then give it to you. And now you can start working on it. You get the facts, you get all of the law and everything you need, and you put your case together, you write it, and pop, you're in, that's it. But most of the work is research. Okay? So Grok is a great researcher. They're excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. You'll get the Supreme Court rulings, you get whatever, you know, whatever codes could be applied in that case. You can ask questions and make the list. Does Federalist Papers have anything to help on that? How about the Anti-Federalist Papers? You just make your list. And your conversation goes on with Grok. At the end of the whatever Grok gives you, you'll find that Grok will throw up two more points that you might be interested in to include in this case. And more often than not, I do. You know, there are things I want to include. And they give me that information. They'll give me another 2 points. And this can go on quite a bit. But the point is, you can spend a half hour with Grok going through all these things, cutting and pasting all this information into a word so you can digest it later. Okay, so you can spend maybe a half hour doing that. Now you got all the research there. Now it's just a matter of digesting it and putting it together in a rational, logical fashion in accordance to the facts of your case, writing your papers, blah, 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 blah. But the point is, what I spent a half hour on could have been a week to get all that information. Okay, so Grok is a great tool from that kind of thinking. I wouldn't look for conclusions of law and run... you know, maybe they can throw some things out, but I don't want Grok to give me the conclusions of law because that's not trustworthy to me.
I think my idea is...
Idea what? Yep, okay.
Each community's National Liberty Alliance should... create their own AI.
I'm missing that. Say it again.
I said National Liberty Alliance should create their own AI.
Oh, National. Yeah, well, look, I tried to school Grok, and then Grok's not looking to be schooled, so. And of course, I couldn't create anything like that. You know, that's a whole different kind of knowledge necessary to create that stuff. You know, it's a shame.
Yes.
You know, there's a certain amount of control still out there, even on AI. That's my opinion. I don't know what it is, because it's not going to give you some things that you're really looking for.
Yes.
I'll bet you dollars to donut if you asked, and I haven't done this, but maybe I'll do this. I'll try this tomorrow. You might want to try it yourself. It might be interesting to ask AI to define common law in the courts. Okay, and I'll bet you they're going to give you it's going to give you the status quo. You know, when you're dealing with this AI, at some point it's almost like you're talking to a person. You got to kind of correct yourself. You got to, you know, grab hold of yourself and realize this is just a machine. You know, but it does. You know, it's really interesting the way it works.
Yes.
And, you know, AI was discovered by accident, by the way. The person who's called the father of AI, I've seen him in a couple of interviews, and he was quite clear. I was not looking for AI. It just happened because I was looking to. He was mapping the brain, and I don't have the articulate abilities to say what he said because he got a little medically. You know, he was talking medical terms and stuff. I understood, but I don't recall. That's the point. But the point is he was mapping the brain, okay?
Yes.
And he fell in somehow, and when he was laying out certain things concerning, you know, again, looking into the science and laying it into the computer, it just was accidental. Not that I understand even that, I don't, but it was an accident.
Yes. See, I think what Glenn Beck was doing is he hired someone to help him design his AI.
Absolutely. I didn't know Glenn Beck had his own AI, but yeah, you have to hire people that have the knowledge, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of money. But look, it's not really worth it, because I'm not going to depend on... I don't even depend on people's and their conclusions. You know, in religion, I think like a Berean, search the scriptures to see if these things are so. In the world here, you receive the information and trust it, but then I want to verify it. You see, the problem is people don't verify the information, and people need to think about this, because what happens if you go on to these social medias, which I don't go on to, but I am on X, and the only reason I went on to X is trying to get information out to people, connecting with the right people, like Glenn Beck and others, the administration, Trump, a lot of people, you know, maybe about 12 people that I'm following, and because I want to get into the conversation so I can get National Liberty Alliance's position out and the necessity of education in these things that everybody's talking about. So people, information you receive, and usually the first piece of information that people get on a certain item, that becomes their truth. And then they fill themselves with a lot of truths, you know, what appears to be their truth. They think it's their truth. They may be right, it may be true, and it may not be, but they don't really know. But that's their truth. And so these people are out there arguing points that they really can't defend. If you say, well, okay, what research did you get, or where did you get, or give me the, where can you quote, or that I can go look that up, that I can find that, did you search that? People just talking out of their rear end sometimes. They're just, and then there's arguments and fights, I'm right, you're wrong, this, that, and the other thing. But there can only be one truth, okay? And that's the important thing people need to think about. There's only one truth. On whatever it is you're looking at, there's one truth. Many ways to get to certain things, but there's only one truth. And so whatever that subject matter is, you want to find that one truth, if you can. And then you can stand on it. But that creates a lot of problems, because people, you know, there's that quote, Mark Twain's quote, okay? It's not what you don't know that's going to get you. What you think... how does it put it? It's what you think you know and ain't so, that's what's going to get you. Okay, and that's the problem. And I speak to myself first. I've come to realize that for myself first. And I really want to think out what my conclusions are and be sure of them before I give them. But of course, I'm subject to error just like anyone else, you know?
Yes.
But we can. But people just talking... You know, first, you know, you hear something, you believe it, like, you know, what is it called, Trump syndrome? What's that called? What's that phrase, Trump something syndrome?
Deranged syndrome?
That's it, yes. Trump deranged syndrome or something like that. Well, what is with these people? What are they doing? What are they, sleeping under a rock? Well, actually, they are sleeping under a rock, because look at, they're listening to a particular place where they're getting the news and they believe. And they believe it to be true. So it's their truth. It ain't true, but it's their truth. And that's the problem. And everybody's got an opinion, and you know what they say about opinions, you know? Everybody's got an opinion, but what really is the truth? You know, I learned quite some time ago, I want to be as right as I can. And so you got to dig down deep and find the truth in whatever it is that you're looking into. Sciences, religion, political history, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm. That's,
We got to move on, because we only got a few more minutes, Ross. And I'd like to get another person.
Yeah.
All right, thanks. Okay, you got Marianne for Indiana. Only got a minute or two. We do have another call I'd like to try to get to, but we ain't got much time.
Hi, I heard the other caller...
You're going to have to get closer to your mic. Can't hear you.
Okay, I heard the other caller ask a question, talk about Indiana.
Okay.
And about regional stuff. It's definitely a problem in Indiana that they're trying to set up regions, and they're bureaucratic regions. So there's no, like, it's like they really don't even exist. They're just trying to make them up out of thin air. Does that make sense?
You talking about gerrymandering?
Not even that. It's worse than that. Far worse.
Okay, yeah, I'm not sure what you mean when you're talking about regional situations.
Well, they're just trying to set up economic regions within Indiana. And it
What does it mean, an economic region? What does that mean, do you know?
It's actually United Nations. It's a UN term.
Oh, well, that's unlawful.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, it's an unlawful entity. Like, they're trying to set them up as being, like, NGOs or it's a travesty. Like, it's totally undermining. It's unconstitutional.
Yeah, I'm kind of familiar. I'm trying to think of the word that really will put it in a nutshell. And it's concerning, for instance, properties and restrictions that go way outside, you know, that which is right.
Well, what they're trying to do is set up regional projects, and it comes through
right.
EDA.gov. So they're setting up regional, they want to set up regional projects that require regional governance.
Yeah, I understand. I'm trying to think of the name of the word for it. I did look into this quite some time ago, but I never got deep into it. But I just got enough information that I needed, and I don't need any more. The only thing I really needed is to understand it's unlawful, because when you have an outside influence trying to influence our government, our way of life, that can't happen. Let's take this communist, for instance, down in New York City, coming in with his socialism, which is really communism. At least Trump says it's communism, but I don't care what it is, socialism or communism. Well, the moment he put his hand on that Bible, which I hope he did put his hand on that Bible, I wonder if he did. You know, I don't think he's a Christian. But let's say the moment he swore to his God, you know, Baal, unless it's Christ, the moment he put his hand and made that swore and took that oath, he guaranteed a Republican form of government. Mm-hmm. Okay? Not a socialist form of government, not a communist form of government. And when people in New York City get fed up enough with this guy to realize the damage that he's going to be doing, okay, and that he's doing at some point in time more economic grief, you know, it just goes on and on and on. Well, hopefully one day they realize, well, it's time to recall this guy, because they can get rid of him in a heartbeat. They can recall him. But they're not ready to recall him yet, because they just elected him. You also have a situation where there's this group, I think it's in Minnesota, I forget what the nationality of people this is, but they've got, and even in Texas there's a place where they have their own court system that's outside of our court system. And we got a place in Minnesota, I think it is a whole town. This is the place I think Omar was elected by these people, because I'm trying to think of the name of the country, but yes, that's it, Somalian. Okay, I mean, I saw the sheriff talking, and he was talking about protecting his people under what he thinks the law is. He hasn't got a clue of what the law is. Okay? So you have this, you have all these people that don't have the American mindset, they don't have the morals, then they don't have the Christian background, which brings us to the focus of, you know, caring for your neighbor, love is the key thing, and morality, and that's why the United States is so much different than any other nation. You know, there's a lot of cruelty out there in other places. I mean, not that it's not here too, but it's not tolerated usually. But it seems to be coming tolerated, because we have so many people that don't have the American mindset. I just heard today that ultimately, altogether, between people that are coming in here on visas, do people have the green cards, and the illegals, we're talking 50 million people. So there are some people in here legally, and that's why Trump wants to send them all back. He wants... And I'm sure he's going to make certain decisions. You know, you'll find an individual that maybe has taken advantage of of what America has to offer, and they become someone that could be a good citizen. Maybe they're pursuing becoming citizen, and maybe they built a business and they're making money and they're paying in their taxes and stuff through their corporation and things are good. I mean, why throw that person out? So I'm sure there's going to be exceptions, okay? Because Trump's brilliant. But in any event, those 50 million people, they have got to go. We got to get back to the American mindset. They come in, they got to get into the boiling pot. What do they call it? The melting pot. Yeah, they got to get into that, and they got to. You can't go to a community and keep your flag and the nation that you came from and the ideals and the laws. Hey, look, you want to come here and enjoy the liberties we have, that's fine. You submit to who we are as a people and leave the other stuff away. You know, we are designed under Israel, okay? It goes back to 1600 B.C. when Israel became a nation. And we're not under Roman law. That's what they teach in bar schools. We're under Israel. It was Thomas Jefferson who discovered the American way, which ultimately is Israel. Our founding fathers called us the new Israel. There's a lot of things, but the point is that that's what we're under. We're under that law. And when Israel, especially when they were wandering for those 40 years, heading for the Promised Land, during that time period, you know, they would stop and camp out for long periods of time, and then they'd pick up stakes and move again. And they'd send scouts out and head when they know that there's other peoples, you know, towns or whatever, and letting them know we're going to be passing by. And sometimes they say, well, don't come passing by this way, you know. They got to go around, whatever the case may be. But the point is this: when they camped out, sometimes they got visited by people, and they referred to them as strangers because they don't know, the way of Israel, And they were pleased to dwell with them because they liked the justice and what was taking place in that kind of a community, that government, okay? And so they were accepted as long as they don't try to change who we are. This is who we are. And that's the same thing here in America. Don't come in here and bring your flag. Don't come in here and bring your morals and bring these things and bring your false religions or whatever. You want to come here and be an American, fine. Don't try to change us. Think and believe what you want, but don't try to change us.
John, the point I was trying to make is that here, I know, for instance, here in Indiana, it's really bad. I've only been living here for 2.5 years, but I've already been kicked out of meetings and thrown out and laughed and mocked because I point out how they're getting convinced, like the local governments are just getting totally played. They're accepting these planning, these like master plans and all. Like, for instance, the town where I live in, I'm not in the town proper, but I'm observing it because I'm part of, like, I'm in the town name, but I'm outside of the downtown. Like, mm-hmm. It's a separate jurisdiction, you know, the separate district. So
okay.
I can't vote for these idiots.
Well, again, there is a conspiracy. There is the deep state. It's got its tentacles all the way down into the towns and the villages, and they depend on ignorance. A lot of people working in government, they're not necessarily thinkers to begin with. They just follow the orders and the rules, and they collect their paycheck, and they don't even know the difference between A or B, they just don't know. And so it's easy to control those people, and that's what you got. But there is the election, take the elections, okay? Let's take the committeemen, which is what I call the statutory committeemen, which aren't even, well, they're statutory. Not the Committee of Safety committeemen. That's the Free and Independent committeemen. That's what National Liberty Alliance is working with, is the Free and Independent committeemen, which is the Committees of Safety. And that's what our founding fathers called themselves, the Committees of Safety. Now, they subverted the committeemen going all the way back a couple of hundred years ago, I'm sure, a long time ago. They subverted the whole process. They statutorized the system eventually, at least by the beginning of the 20th century. that's when they were really pushing hard on statutes. As we turned, I did some research here in New York, and this is what we discovered. The statutorizing the committeemen here in New York. And that probably went throughout the whole United States. So what happens, and then they oscillated the powers. In other words, the committeemen are elected, okay, every 2 years. And then everyone is cast out and reelected every 2 years. So there's no one there really to meet unless you get reelected again. I mean, that's the way the process is supposed to work. That's how Congress works. Everybody leaves, and now everybody's got to run for election together. But in any event, what they did is, they here in New York, and I'm sure they did in a lot of other states, we got 62 counties. So 31 counties did the committeemen, or replaced the committeemen on odd years, and 31 counties replaced the committeemen on even years. And that maintained a control up on the upper level, you know, on the state level. They always had that control. So when the committeemen come in, they're met by party bosses. So the whole system's been taken over by party bosses. Now every county is controlled by four or five party bosses. Okay, the people will hold the certain chairs that control the committeeman process within that county. And then up on the state level, okay, the people working on the Board of Elections, they have been ran and become the state committeemen, which is totally, it's just, you know, the state committeemen is supposed to be the chairman of the county. So there's 62 counties here in New York, the 62 chairmen that go up to the state, and they make up that committee that deals with the state decisions on the state level, like who's running for governor. But then it still has to be, it's supposed to be approved by the county committees. They take that information back to their counties, discuss it, make their plans, see if they're going to run the paperwork, so on and so forth, walk the papers and get them on the ballot, and et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is, up on the state level, it's not controlled that way. It's actually people that are working for the state, number one, and this is a conflict of interest because they're working at the Board of Elections, they're working for the state. That in itself makes it a conflict of interest. They become the state committeemen, and out of those state committeemen, out of those 62 individuals, there are five people, and those five people are the party bosses on the state level, and everything funnels down that way. It's a total control. So when you get the different two parties, and no Republican, no natural law republic, okay, can survive political parties. It just can't happen. And that's why we're falling apart as a people and as a nation. We have to fix this problem. You know, we're trying to hopefully help to fix this problem by dealing with this administration. I'm not sure whether they're really listening or not, but we'll see what happens as time goes on. But in any event, the point is, this is all controlled. And, you know, look at, on a real top level, okay, on these political parties, they may look like they're fighting, but they're buds. They're working together. They have an agenda. So when you go to vote, you get the option to vote for the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. That's your choice. Every once in a while, a good person gets in, but generally speaking, it's hard. Okay. Trump getting into, at the time he got into, and what he's been doing, That's a one in a million shot. That was an impossibility, but it happened. And because of that, we're going to save this nation. But we may never be able to bring it where it belongs unless the people step up and take care of business, because only the people can save America. Only people can save the republic, because the people have to exercise their unalienable right of government by consent. So if we don't exercise that right of government by consent, then someone's going to exercise it for us, aren't they? And that's, we go back to party bosses again. We got to get rid of political parties, got to get rid of the Bar Association, got to get rid of all these federal judges and anybody belonging to the bar, and get all new people in that don't own their allegiance to the bar or the deep state or the New World Order. Anyway.
Okay, I guess what I was hoping, did he say what county he was in?
No, the individual early on?
Yeah.
No, just the state.
Which regional sewer?
Yeah, I don't...
There are several, like Blackford County or whatever.
Well, look, he's probably listening in right now, and if he is, I'm sure he'll probably be here next week, and if you're here next week, maybe he'll pick up the mic up, and you guys can talk a little bit.
Okay.
Okay? All right, with that, we got to go. It's 10 after 11. I know we have two people left. Well, I'll tell you, I'll give each one a minute. That's it. But we really got to go in 2 minutes, let's say. We'll take, what's this, Julio? J-U-L-I-O, I think. What state? And we only got a minute.
California.
Oh, okay, California. Whoa.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I
do believe now that California is even worse than New York, and believe me, New York is a mess.
Yeah. So this is the first. I've gotten myself into a situation where I've got to deal with the courts, this is just my first time, kind of. Looking at it, and it's something that I always resisted or was kind of afraid of. So I just wanted to thank you for pulling this stuff together. You learn all the stuff. I'm going to learn it. I don't know if I have enough time to learn in a way where I can tackle this confidently. But yeah, it's just a summons for money that's owed. I got served a couple of days ago, and then it's with American Express. And I'm just learning it.
Let me ask you a question. Do you have an orderly mind? Do you find yourself putting everything in order, having processes in your life and whatever it is, and reasonable control over the things of your life? Is that kind of a state of mind you have, or no?
It is something that I look to create. That I'm always working to create, but the way I move, it doesn't. It's not something that comes natural.
Well, the desire is the beginning of things, and if you stick at it, then you'll get to it. Because if you bring yourself to that, and anybody can bring themselves to that position, okay, you got to look at it. You have to have faith in yourself at some point. And I've said a lot of things in my life over the years. I'm going to do this, and I went to do it, and I failed, and I failed, and I failed, and I finally did it. And yeah. Everything's the same thing, you know, everything in my life, I've done a lot of different things in my life. But the thing is, everything is in order. I try to keep everything in order. And so if you're a person that puts everything into order, you can learn this stuff relatively quickly then.
And you put
everything in order as you go through. One of the key things is, as in learning in anything, okay, is not to let anything pass by you. If there's a word or a phrase that you don't understand, we have this habit of, we got enough information, everything around. We don't need to know that necessarily. We just keep going. No, you got to stop and figure out what the heck is going on there. What do those words mean? What's that phrase mean? And look into it. Because if you let it go by, you just lost a big lesson. And the biggest lessons that you learn if you develop that kind of a habit by letting those things go by, okay, one of the biggest lessons you're going to learn is you're going to beat up in court and nipped in the rear end with something you never saw coming because they wrote something in their paperwork and you kind of glazed over it and didn't research what exactly are they talking about, and you didn't get it. That's what they want on.
Okay, so start with the paperwork. Huh? Yeah, you would say start with the paperwork, like with a fine-tooth comb, go over the paperwork that they were giving me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And look, you have to have the structure and the logic, and therein is the course.
Okay.
Everyone should be taking that course, everybody. And I'll tell you what, the most important book, in my opinion, is Government by Consent.
Okay.
The court access book is also good to have, but you do have all that stuff in the course. But this is something you can carry with you, so it's good to have. And it's something you can breeze through quickly sometimes if you're looking for a particular memorandum or you're looking for a particular cause of action. You can find all that this in this book quickly, okay? But you'll find it in a course too. But anybody who does not know the law is in jeopardy, because at some point in time, good chance you're going to end up in a court. Well, you're going to want to go to court, and you're not going to be able to because you can't take care of your business.
Exactly.
And then you don't have money to throw out these lawyers, which is worthless anyway. You know, they're all thieves.
So I'm looking forward to learning this stuff and then turning it back around, you know, for people, because I do think, you know, with all the politics and everything, that's one thing, but it is going to be on us to kind of make sense of this and then figure out how to. It is. It's a missing course. It's something that should have been done when I was in high school.
Our children, we need to get the Bible back into school. Bible was taken out of the school in 1963. Okay, our founding fathers made a big thing about it. They didn't require it by law because they couldn't, but they spoke about it, and they got a lot of legislation things in legislation that talks about it. And we had kept the Bible in the school all the way until 1963. Children learned history. They learned who the king of the court was. They learned morality. And, you know, you could be a Jew, you could be anything you want, but the book gives a lot for anybody and everyone, okay? And that's the American mindset, the original American mindset. And a lot of us received that through osmosis, so to speak. You know, we kind of just sucked it in because we were born free and we believe we're free and I can do this, I got rights, you know, this is the attitude of American. But we also have morals, okay? And all that connected makes us who we are, and we've lost that, okay? Children learn to read out of the Bible, okay? So there's a lot. The Bible's got to get back into school, got to get rid of the Bar Association, because that's destructive to who we are as a people. The purpose of the Bar was to destroy our common law courts. That's their total purpose. The king sent them over here in 1750, even before we became a nation, while we were colonies, because we were a problem to the king. Benjamin Franklin was a thorn in his side, and so they had to destroy our courts. They have succeeded, by the way, and we need to resurrect it back. Everything's there, but it's covered by a veil of corporatism.
We got to get this to the younger kids, the stuff that you've pulled together. So I just appreciate you pulling it all together and then starting to get this into the consciousness of folks and getting a little confidence behind it myself and helping others.
Yeah, my last point I'd like to make on this, though, is anybody who gets deep into this stuff that really wants to learn this stuff on a heavy level, well, they've got a lot that they can offer to their community and the committees of safety, and joining in on the judicial committee within their committee of safety, because then they would be the experts of the law, what's going on. But everybody should know the law. Children should come out of school knowing the law. They should know who we are, that we're a Christian nation. They should know the law, what common law is that, what the foundation is of our. They should know all these things, okay, but they don't. And we're in trouble. And that's why, I heard that 52% of the people, of young people, I forget what age limit, maybe a college level, maybe a little over, I don't know, but somewhere, the younger people, okay, I heard 52% of younger people think we need to move towards socialism.
Wow.
We're in trouble, aren't we? Yeah. We got to educate these kids. They have no clue. They don't know. And that's the other thing, is they don't see the two sides. They only see the one side. Socialism, communism, it sounds real good when they're trying to sell it. Oh, there's all kinds of great stuff. You know, you're going to be free. You're going to have this. You're going to be all kinds of stuff. And then finally, when they take over, then the claw closes, and that's it. You're done. And then you live in hell, you know?
Yeah. I see it.
Anyway, we got to go.
Thanks.
Okay. Walt, I can give you a minute or two. I know my minute's been long. It's getting late.
Yeah, John, it's in your common law handbook, I think, a code or law where the court loses jurisdiction if they don't follow due process. Is there anything like that? I know there has to be in New York State.
Well, they don't have jurisdiction if you can't get due process. If you can't, statutes, regulations, if they're using trial court rulings on you, that's all denial of due process.
Right, what I'm saying is, can you tell me, cite this one example where you could use in court to tell a New York State, not the federal, that you're not following due process, so you lost your jurisdiction? How could someone say that to a judge in a court? What would they cite?
You would see that in this verified judicial challenge here. I don't know, are you coming in on the phone? You don't see my desktop, right?
No.
Yeah, if you come in, if you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, go to Education Starts Here, highlight that. You come down to Law, highlight that, and then you move over to Court Forms and Process, and you click on that. When you get to that, about, I don't know, a little bit down the page, you'll come to a point where it says instructions and forms for traffic court. And also underneath that, there's instruction and forms to challenge jurisdiction. So those are two different groups of paper that you can read through, and you'll get what you're looking for there. With that, we got to end the program. If you want to talk more, we'll see you next week. Right?
Bye.
All right. Good night, everybody. And we have a Bible studies on Wednesday, 7:30. Anybody interested? Right here in this room. Good night.